Blog Talk Radio.
Absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Let's go. Ain't no room for hesitation up in here. It's time to leave it on the field. Because it's game time. It's time to make your hard work pay off. Make your mom and dad proud. Make your opponent pay the price. It's time to step up and get it done, son. You go hard or you go home. From the first whistle to the last. Bring it all day, every play. Because you know your boys are going to put on the line for you. They got your back, so you better have theirs. This is about the team. It's about pride. It's about who's the hungriest. So what's it going to be, man? You going to leave it on the field, or you going to leave it inside? You going to leave it or something in your tank? Or you going to do what champions do? Leave nothing. Leave nothing.
Hello, once again. This is JT, a.k.a. The Master, and this is The Master Plan. The number to call in is 347-637-3220. 347-637-3220. If you want to talk to me, call that number, and well, we can talk. We are also having the chat room open. If you like to jump on the chat room to ask a question, make a statement, or comment, the chat room. If you don't want to talk to me, I don't know a reason why you shouldn't want to talk to me. But if you don't want to talk to me, you just want to listen or just want to converse on the chat room, it's there for your convenience. It's always open season. Regardless of the subject matter that I'm speaking on, if you want to change the subject in the chat room, feel free. I'm here for you. Like I said, this is the Master Plan. It's a cold and a frosty day on the East Coast is where I stay, and we got a little snow on the ground. But it's nothing. It's probably going to be gone by the end of the day. It's a very light snow. I was a little surprised when I saw the little white stuff on the ground. But it is what it is. It's that time of year. It's football season, especially playoff season. But before that, we talk about that. I'm going to talk about, and I'm not a great guy to be talking about this, but it is breaking news. It's something that's been going on. It's one of the pro sports that's going through the same thing that two of the four pro sports have gone through already. We're talking about a lockout. We're talking about the NHL, and believe it or not, people, for those who are pessimistic that the NHL season, especially the hockey fans, wasn't going to get done, I got this this morning when I woke up. It's an article from Yahoo Sports. I'm going to read this article and leave it at that because, like I said, I'm not a big hockey person. I do believe that if you watch hockey on high definition on TV, it's probably one of the best sports to watch on high definition or HDTV, but I don't watch it often, but when I do watch it, quite naturally, I prefer to watch it on high definition versus standard TV. But let me read this article, and then we'll move on from there. For NHL owners and players, it's time to shut up and play. If you were one of the many infuriated by the NHL lockout, just like the NBA, just like the NFL, one of the many bored by the bickering of one of the many who said, "Wake me when it's over," well, rise and shine. It's safe to poke your head out of the covers now. The NHL is back. And Gary Bettman had said in the last few days, give or take, whatever, that if they didn't get a deal done by January the 11th, the hockey season would be done. So I guess you needed that 12-hour type of talk in order to get something done because there's billionaires trying to pay millionaires and trying to come to an understanding. Not all of what I'm saying now is in the article, but I'm just putting a little bits of, my little bits and pieces of what I've seen from the NHL and the NBA and the NFL. The owners and players emerged from their deep, dark night about 5 a.m. Sunday in New York, the city that never sleeps, after a marathon session with a U.S. federal mediator, produced a tentative collective bargaining agreement. This being the digital age, the news was broken not by the media that had been stating out the sites of the talks, the NHL Players Association's Manhattan Hotel, excuse me. No, the news was broken by Andrew Ferentz, a player involved in meetings, who tweeted a single character, a symbol, a thumbs up. So that's social media ahead of the mass media, meaning the writers and the television media, tweeted, and it probably went viral from there. NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman and NHLPA Executive Director Donald Fehr gave quick statements to the media, with Bettman confirming an agreement on the framework, that's in quotation marks, of the new CBA. But they took no questions. It was a long night, and there's still a long way to go. Many details need to be ironed out, such as whether there will be a 48 or 50-game season, and when exactly it will start. The legal language needs to be shaped, polished, and reviewed. But both the owners and the players need to ratify the deal. But barring something unforeseen, training camps will open this week, and the season will open next week. The league is likely to feature rivalry games early and an interconference schedule. There will be a full playoff season. The Stanley Cup stamped with the shameful season not played, that's in quotation marks, after a lockout canceled the 2004-2005 season will be awarded. This will be like 94-95 when a lockout ended in January and produced a sprint to the finish short the season. Now, listen to that, people. They had a lockout in 2004-2005, another one in 94-95, and now this one in 2012-2013. You know, the other major sports haven't had that. And hockey, in my opinion, is the least of the sports, the pro sports, that can afford to do that to their fans, because of the simple fact is it's not the higher of the four revenue making sports. So why I don't understand why they're doing there's so much of a problem, and they're locking players out left and right. This is the third time in quite a few years that they're knocking each other apart and the owners locking the players out. That's crazy. Some of the final compromises: the term of the CBA will be 10 years with an out after 8 years. Now that sounds like the NFL. Contract lengths will be limited to 7 years or eight if a team resigns its own player. The salary cap in year two will be $64.3 million, the same as it was last season. All were contentious issues. Now the question is this: who won? We should know better by now than to declare winners and losers before a CBA has played out, let alone before a CBA had been put to paper. The owners supposedly crushed the union last time, forcing the players to accept a salary cap and a 24% rollback, and look at what happened. The way the deal worked out, the players wanted to keep playing under it, and the owners were willing to stage the third lockout in three negotiations. Now, 24%, in the last lockout, they rolled back the salaries, and the owners still want more blood money. Come on, man. Come on. You know, that's the one of the reasons why I don't side with owners, because the fact is you take 24%, which is a huge cut from a salary, 24% you take, and then when the next contract rolls around, you want more? You just took 24%. Come on. Come on. I understand you may want a little bit more rollback, but how much more can you take from a stone? You know, you only get so much blood from a stone. Jesus. Well, anyway, that said, it's safe to say everyone lost, but both sides can declare victory in relative terms. Everyone lost because the third straight lockout was unacceptable. That's what I'm talking about, especially a lockout this long, when it wasn't about fundamental issues like the very existence of the salary cap. Everyone lost because the NHL brand was damaged while two stubborn sides not only fought to the brink, but often fought dirty and ugly along the way. It's inevitable, and I'm not reading, I'm reading the article, but I'm putting my little two cents in it after I read a certain part of it. It's inevitable when you go through a lockout or strike, one or the other, it doesn't really make a difference. I understand one's completely different from the other. I do understand that. But when you two sides are in dispute of what it should be and what the agreement should be, especially one is trying to take money from away from the other. Like I said in the beginning, billionaires taking away from millionaires. It can get personal, and when it starts getting personal, whoever fires the first salvo, it can start to get ugly. One owner can take it personal on what the players are doing, or vice versa, and it starts getting personal, and feelings start getting hyped up, and you start growing further and further apart and more rigid in your position, and you get nowhere. Hence, they had to bring in a U.S. federal mediator, and it took a while even for the mediator to work through all the mush mass or whatever you want to call it to get to a tentative agreement. Now, like I said earlier, neither side has signed a contract to ratify this. Neither of them have put their signature on a dotted line. This was just negotiators coming to some type of agreement, agreeing on a tentative agreement. Everyone lost because games were not played. Everyone lost because the NHL brand was damaged while two stubborn sides not only fought to the brink, but often fought dirty and ugly along the way, like I said before. Everyone lost because games were not played, goals were not scored, and money was not made. That's the bottom line. Money was not made, okay? Not just the owners and the players, but the regular people who depend on the NHL and help make the hockey culture what it is. Everyone lost because, yeah, they finally will show up, but the bottom line is they will show up late again. Third time in since 1994-95 that they've had a lockout. Doesn't make any sense to me, but this like I said, this is a pro sport that can at least afford to have lockouts. No one deserves a bouquet for working through the night and getting this done except the mediator, Scott Beckenpaw, who was able to ease tensions while shuttling between the sides Friday, find common ground, and get them back together face-to-face on Saturday. This should have been done a long time ago. If not in September, then in October when the NHL made a pitch to save an 82-game season, or December when the players started negotiating on the owner's framework. Both sides screwed up at different points. There's no excuses. Well, hello. You can say that now. It should have been done a long time ago, but it never does get done when things get to this. But the owners say they can say they won because they're leveraged to mine the crown of the jewels of this negotiation, more money and a more restrictive system. The players used to make 57% of hockey-related revenue. They will now make 50% after transition payments, saving the owners billions in future dollars. What else is new? The players' contract lengths used to be unlimited, and GMs used loopholes to front-load and back-dive and circumvent the cap. Now the players' contract lengths are limited, and salary variances rules are tighter. Will that fix the league underlying issues? We'll see. Even with the player share lowered, the system more restrictive, and revenue sharing increased, this will still be a business that generates most of its revenue locally and ties its salary range to league revenues. The rich inflating the salary cap and the floor, the poor struggling to keep up. But the owners targeted the 50-50 split from the beginning. This is fairly close to what they wanted. The players can say they won because they mitigated their losses, and given their position, that was their goal all along. They acknowledged from the beginning their share would be reduced. They knew they were going to have to settle for a 50-50 split of the revenue, costing them billions in future dollars. But while they also gave up half a season of salary in this fight, they gained $300 million in transition payments. They fought off most of the league's attacks on contracting rights, keeping entry-level rules, arbitration rights, and free agency eligibility the same. Not settling for the 5-year contract length limit the owners wanted. They gained a defined benefit in pensions. Excuse me, they gained a defined benefit pension. They also became a real union again. In the aftermath of the 2004-2005 lockout, the Players Association went through a period of infighting. It went through multiple executive directors, but Donald Fear reorganized and re-energized the union, and for all the criticism he received, some deserved, some not, he helped the players stand up for themselves. The league repeatedly set deadlines, walked out, and made, in quotation mark, best offers, but Fear and the players didn't blink, held together, got better offers. Will all this be enough to stop the next lockout? Now, remember, since 1994-95, they've had 3 lockouts, including this one. This is crazy in pro sports. But that's how the owners work in the NHL versus the NBA and the NFL. But I think this is a growing trend that's going to be any time the negotiations are coming up, a contract's coming up, the owners, rather than have the players possibly strike, going to lock out the players and try to get the leverage like that. Will all this be enough to stop the next lockout? How well will the fans and sponsors come back when the puck drops? It's too early to say, but at least there will be a labor peace for the next 8 years, maybe the next decade. And this business that relies on the passion of its hardcore customers, maybe too much, taking them for granted, can finally begin the healing process. The sun is up. It's a new day. And like I said in the beginning, time to shut up and play. I got a caller on the line. I think I know who he is. Mikal, you and I both don't watch hockey that much. But when I woke up, I saw this, and it is news because the fact is they've been locked out so long, and it was a threat of not having another hockey season.
Again?
Well, no. Like I said, they reached a tentative agreement, so we'll see what happens from there.
I don't know about you, but I can only speak from, me and Victor's generation. I think it was NHL 2004,
right?
Maybe NHL 2003. One of those games on EA Sports turned me on to hockey.
Mm-hmm.
And I think like right around that time, then they had a lockout.
2004, 2005.
Yeah, and then I tuned out,
mm-hmm.
and I haven't tuned back in.
Yep.
We had the little Capitals here making a little noise,
mm-hmm.
but. It just, other than catching that joint on SportsCenter when they get in there and get the wrecking.
Right.
I don't even want to watch the whole sport of it. And I'm a competitive dude.
Right.
But hearing them squabble over this, I swear it's like chickens in the chicken coop. Just walk. And I don't mean chickens, neither. I don't mean real chickens, neither.
I hear you. Hey, what can I tell you? I was alluding to this as I was reading the article. The casual fan, the fan that may have gotten, for some reason or another, interested in hockey before this lockout, versus the hardcore fan that's definitely going to come back. Maybe you probably lose some of those hardcore fans because of the bitterness of a third lockout. But the casual fan, that like yourself, that for one reason or another got interested in hockey, and now the lockout came, and you lose interest, and you move on, and you find something else to gain your interest, and on a regular basis. The NHL, who is, I wouldn't say revenue poor, because they're not really revenue poor, but I would say the poorest of the four major sports, in my opinion, can ill afford, and could have ill afforded to do this again for the third time since 94. I mean, it makes no sense to me. If you get in contract negotiations and contracts expired, that the owners, in their infinite wisdom, and I say that in quotation marks, and sarcastically, decide to lock the players out. Now, in 2004, 2005, just like I read the article, they took 24% of the player's salary. 24% from what I'm reading. 24%. Let me just see if I read this right again.
That wasn't sexy at all.
Let me see if I can.
And they already got to give up another 24% to Uncle Sam. Good gracious.
Okay, the owners. I'll read this sentence to you again. The owners supposedly crushed the union last time. That was in 2004, 2005, forcing the players to accept a salary cap and a 24% rollback. And look what happened. 24%. They took back in the salary cap. So they more or less. They really rolled back the salaries of the players last time. And now the owners were looking to get a 50-50 split versus a 57-43 split, which favored the players, which eventually they got that. They got a 50-50 split. They did the same thing. Not the same thing, but relatively the same thing that the NFL did. When they negotiated a 10-year contract, so with a option to opt out of it in year 8, I think the players have the same thing, maybe year 7, something like that. Anyway, so hopefully they'll have labor peace for at least 8 years, and they don't have to revisit this again for another 10 years if they know what's good for them. 2004, 2005, and this is like year 7, year 8, depending on what you want to talk about. Year 8, and they do it again. I don't know how long the other contract was, but apparently it was for that length of time because they came up again and pulled a lockout. And we had talked about this before when the NBA – had their lockout, and the NFL had their lockout, it was a growing trend with the ownership. Rather than having to deal with a strike, the owners pulled a switch and locked the players out. Trying to gain more leverage and didn't care about the media hit, thinking that they had the fans in their pocket, and they were really trying to, for the most part, break the union. What do you think about that?
Oh, definitely to break the union.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people really don't understand the value of, you know, unions. You know, unfortunately, you know, I grew up, you know, in a period of where unions were successful, and I was, you know, taught that way.
Right.
You know, nowadays it's just this whole, you know, every man for himself type of thing, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, I got to eat, and, you know, and I don't care about what everybody else. I mean, I don't know what's going on with these youngins, man. I swear. And I swore that I would never sound like that when I was a young man. I'd never sound like that.
Mm-hmm.
Now I sound just like them older brothers, those elder brothers that were saying the same stuff. Because looking at this mess, and we are constantly allowing the unions to do it. And it's just, you know, it's on a small scale with the sports, but guess what? It's going on in the United States right now, period. You know, and it's going on strong. And it's going on for a reason. It's going on for a reason.
What do you think that is?
Oh, the reason is because, you know, with the economy the way that it is, and you know, for some strange reason, they done figured out that they just can't keep printing new money and make more money. It's just not working. It's just not working.
Okay.
They didn't figure that out.
Well, my first job, I wouldn't say my first job, my last job, I should say, a job I retired from, I was in a union, a communication workers union for 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
So, to state the least, I've been weaned in union thinking. And I've always believed and still believe to this day that unions built this country, and the country owes a lot to unions. Now I can't dispute the fact that there's been an abuse of powers of unions, and because of that there's been a backlash against unions. But to this day, I still think a union is a viable tool in American worker against the management and things that can be done to a worker if he's not in a union and being left unprotected from management personnel that for some reason may have some type of reason to hurt the worker. Financially,
or intimidate the worker, yeah.
Yes, exactly. Intimidate them or whatever. And so the union, there needs to be some type of protective force, I hate to say it like that, but a union to protect the American worker against unfair practices that we all know that management likes to inflict on their workers if left unchecked.
Right.
I still believe that, but there's always checks and balances on both sides, and I think the mindset and has gotten to people to think that unions are bad, especially, like you said, to the newer generation, younger generation, because the fact is they've been the media blitz and the so-called
Just brainwashed.
Yeah,
exactly what it is.
Yeah, brainwashed to think that unions are bad when a lot of their parents and maybe grandparents helped support their families.
Right. Participating in the union.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Exactly. So, because my God, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
My father was a postal worker, so he was in a union until he passed away. But so that's my roots. And I've seen it on both sides. I've been in jobs where there was no union before I was in a union for a long period of time, and it could be not a pretty sight when you may be doing your job, but for one reason or another, your boss or your boss's boss has it in for you, and you have no protection. Basically, you have no protection, and they will take advantage of that. So I don't know what
exactly
you think about that, but
no, I totally agree with you. You know, I think the balance has been, you know, stored so strong by the unions that no one even remembers the day when management would just extremely abusive.
Right.
It was just extremely abusive. I mean, all of the safety mechanisms that are put in place, all your little 401ks and your and your health benefits and all that kind of carrying on, all the things that you look at as, you know, perks and you know, desirable things in order for you to have a job. Guess what? All of those things were set up by unions.
Exactly.
It was set up and fought for by unions.
Yep.
And then other companies saw the value in it, and they applied it and used it as well. So, you know, it just goes round and round. It just goes round and round with that. Round and round.
Okay. I just wanted to bring that to light, the NHL agreement, and my thoughts on the agreement, and also my thoughts on unions, basically. So we can move on from that, because I wanted to talk about something else here that has come up that I found out again this morning, and I'll play this clip, and then we'll come back and I will talk about it right here.
Adam Schefter reporting from league sources that Doug Marrone has agreed to leave Syracuse and take the Bills' head job. Marrone coached the Orange for 4 years, restored that program to respectability. Syracuse 8-5 this past season. Our NFL analyst Herm Edwards back with us, and just so happens you hired Doug Marrone with the Jets way back when.
Yes.
What does he bring to the table in Buffalo?
Well, he's great leader, good offensive mind. He's been in a West Coast system. He studied under Paul Hackett and Chad Payne. I think what he does, he understands developing players is very important. He did a great job with our offensive line. We had a kid named Brandon Moore that was a defensive tackle. I said, we're going to play guard. Took him a whole year, but we made him a guard. He's still there, made the Pro Bowl a couple years back. But he understands the National Football League. What he's got to do, though, for his success right now, in my opinion, he's got to fix the defense. I mean, this defense struggled 435 points. They weren't very good. They talked about it in the offseason how they brought all the players in there. They drafted players, signed a bunch of free agency, but they really didn't get it done. Offensively, they will move the football.
All right. Doug Marrone, he spent last four seasons, like Herman, like the report said, as a head coach at Syracuse. He was 500 at 25-25. His last season, this past season, he was 8-5. He reached two bowl games as head coach, which was the Pinstripe Bowl, and he won both of them, 2010 and 2012. And like Herb said, he was a coach with the Jets, and he also was an NFL assistant from 2002 to 2008, and Saints offensive coordinator from 2006 to 2008. So he's a college coach, and he's got some NFL experience. He's one of several coaches that interviewed for the Bills head coaching job, Chip Kelly being one of them, Lovie Smith being another, but eventually they settled on Doug Marrone. What do you think about this guy, another college coach, even though he's got NFL experience, but he's been in college for four seasons, 4 or 5 years, coming back to the NFL, and hopefully he'll get the defense straightened out, which needs to be straightened out in Buffalo for the Bills. What do you think about them, McCaff?
Let me say this first. The views expressed by McCaff are by McCaff only, not of FSP or any of its affiliates. Let me say that straight out first.
Okay.
But thank God Lovey did not get that job. I just want to say that. Thank God. He did not get that job. Buffalo is just like one of the Buffalo has got to be has got to be the piss poorest coaching place to coach at in the NFL, one or at least in the top two. And I really like Lovey, and they were all pushing, you know, talk buzzing that Lovey would get that head coach. I was praying that he wouldn't. I wouldn't like to see him there. Let me put my hat on the other side. You know, for the Bills, you know, cheap pick, you know, not a retread. I don't expect anything from this man. But you know. Well, you know, let's give him a shot. Let's see. But it doesn't look too. It don't look that promising. I mean, if he had about 500 coaching, you know, in the college ranks, and had some NFL experience, I don't know. Maybe they could have. They probably could have did better, but it is Buffalo.
Well, let me put it this way. The Chip Kelly interview for the job, along with the Eagles, and also with the Cleveland Browns. And it looks
that's
like
that's the guy from Oregon, right?
Yes.
Yeah,
and
he's going to Cleveland.
Well, let me put it this way. I'm reading a report now that says that the Eagles are willing to keep Michael Vick if Chip Kelly takes over as the head coach.
Ooh.
Obviously, Vick would have to restructure his deal because he's currently scheduled to make $15.5 million in 2013, and everybody knows that's not going to happen. He turns 33 in June. He fits Kelly's desire for an athletic quarterback to run his offense much more than Nick Foles. So I guess they're putting that carrot out there because in Cleveland, where everybody supposedly thinks that Chip Kelly wants to go, Chip Kelly doesn't have that type of quarterback there. He's got Brandon Whedon, who's a pocket quarterback. And he's got a slow-footed Colt McCoy. One's got a decent arm that's fairly accurate, but he stays in the pocket, and he's going to be a second-year player, which wouldn't fit his offense. And the other's got a pop gun arm, who's a little bit more mobile, but like I said, he's got a popcorn arm, and he's not not that accurate. So that means they would have to get a new quarterback to fit Chip Kelly's offense in Cleveland versus Eagles have a quarterback that somewhat can work in Chip Kelly's offense because he's a very mobile quarterback. I don't know about your thoughts on this, but talk to me. Go ahead.
No, this is just, you know, I love Michael Vick. I ain't even going to lie to you, man.
Mm-hmm.
I have always loved Michael Vick. You know, even through all his so-called trials and tribulations, I'd
mm-hmm.
say it like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not an apologist for him either, but I don't like the way they, you know, carried him around like that. They need to go ahead and make up their mind. But, you know, they in the position of you know, of power, so you know they can play that out. If I was Mike, I probably wouldn't even take it. I would, you know, take my chances elsewhere, shop around, look around, and do my thing. And you know, hopefully somebody can set up something truthfully, you know, geared towards him. I don't know if this guy Chip is going to. Nobody knows what this guy's going to do. He's playing sides because I read a report that he was going to Cleveland, and you know, Philadelphia just don't know how good they got it. They don't,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think they need to take Dave Madison. I hope they get whatever's coming to them. I hope they get exactly what the hell is coming to them. And in all honesty, they need to be right where they're supposed to be at the bottom of the NFC East, because they are the ultimate embarrassment of this division. Period.
Really, really. Why do you say that?
How many Super Bowls they? How many Super Bowl trophies they got? How many? Thank you.
I did that on purpose. Yeah. Okay.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Cowboys got 5, Giants got 4, we got 3. How many they got? They got nothing. Every time they've gone to the Super Bowl, they've lost.
Mm-hmm.
Dick Vermeil took them in 81, they lost. Andy Reid, you know, got them up there one time, they lost. And the only thing I can remember when Andy was there with McNabb is, you know, that that 2-minute drill that was going on for about 5 minutes.
Right.
And he just huffing and puffing and getting back to the top of the, getting back to the line of scrimmage, and T.O. playing his heart out.
Mm-hmm.
But he was the cancer. He was the problem. You know.
So my question,
rat.
My question is this, because it sounded like this to me, but I got to ask you this question. Do you think they made a good choice in getting rid of Andy Reid?
No, I don't think they made a good choice by getting rid of Andy Reid. I thought that was a bad move. I think what needed to happen was just a restructuring of his assistants, because he obviously does not know, has lost his touch with that part. But coaching up players, picking out personnel, you know, player personnel, and getting the best out of them, I think he's been good and consistent with that. And you know, the Chiefs saw that. I think what gave Andy Reid so much stability was Jimmy Johnson.
Okay, the defensive coordinator you're talking about.
Yeah, the defensive coordinator that passed on.
Right.
Him and McNabb. Those two.
Okay.
Those two brought a lot of stability there, because I remember those Philadelphia defenses, dude. Those Philadelphia defenses were mesmerizing.
Yep.
I mean, they were just it was just unfathomable how they were playing defense. I mean, they basically had an entire defense, Philadelphia. I mean, just an entire ironclad defense, and then basically one man on the other side. Till they picked up. Then they got Westbrook, and they had T.O. That was it.
Mm-hmm.
That was it. It was like they never went out and got any other wide receivers. They never developed any more players and stuff like that. And you know, to that fault, I fault Andy Reid.
Right.
You know, he should have developed more wide receivers. He should have developed developed a more stable running game, because McNabb should still be playing quarterback in the NFL. I think the dude's punch drunk.
You really think so, huh? I think he, and I want to interject here for a minute. He was, and it's been shown out for the last few years that the offensive line that he was playing by when he was a quarterback at Philly was absolutely horrible, and still hasn't really changed.
No.
It has been one of the reasons why Michael Vick can't stay in the game, because of the fact that he's got to run for his life behind that offensive line.
Exactly, and he always hurt.
And for the simple fact is, when he went to Minnesota, he had the same problem in Minnesota with his offensive line. I understand he didn't play that well, but
no, I'm with you. No, I know where you're going, because I made that same argument. You know, just discrediting McNabb, you know, and all his arguments to Shanahan. But I thought he was punch drunk. He was 2 years punch drunk when he got here.
Okay, I understand what you're saying, because the fact is he took so much abuse behind that line in Philly than he came to Washington. But Washington didn't have a strong line when he was there either, and he was running for his life a lot.
We ain't helped him out neither. We ain't helped him out neither. And when he got here, he thought he was just going to dictate and tell the Shanahans what they were going to give him.
Right,
it
yeah.
It didn't happen.
Right.
And oddly enough, you know, When he was in there, he looked pretty decent. But when they took him out and they put Grossman in, that I saw what they were trying to do with that offense.
Mm-hmm.
And immediately I got it, and I thought, yo, if these guys can get this thing going, they got something. They got something. And lo and behold, they were right. They were right.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean,
all
because
right.
our line still sucks. That the Redskins' offensive line still sucks.
Mm-hmm.
But the way that that young man is calling the plays and stuff like that, and the way that they use a youngin, oh no, it looks like a totally different line now.
All right. Well, that's a good transition because I did want to transition into the games that are taking place because we got about 14 minutes left in the live air.
And oh,
it's
yeah.
A good time to transition into these two games.
Let's get to that better team in Texas. Let's talk about them.
Well, we could talk about that briefly. I watched this game yesterday. And
yeah, I definitely want to know what you think because I got some choice words for you, bruh.
Because I am definitely worried about the next game because my quarterback, for some reason, I don't know if he's got the Donovan McNabb's disease or not because he looks like he's a little skittish sitting back in a pocket and a little unsure of himself and doesn't seem like he has the confidence to make the right read and make the right throw, even though he threw pretty well yesterday. Pass that he threw definitely should not have been thrown. I understand, in reality, this was his first playoff experience. He's never been in the playoffs before because he was hurt last year, and that was the first time the Texans were ever in the playoffs. But you've faced this team before. It wasn't like they haven't faced this team before. They faced them last year, but it was with T.J. Yates as a quarterback.
Right.
You can't make that throw in the playoffs, and you got to be more – thank God for Arian Foster. Let me put it this way. Thank God for the running game because that's what saved this team from more harm than good. I'm very extremely worried. Extremely worried about them going to Foxborough to play the Patriots with the type of game they played offensively yesterday. I don't know
right.
how you feel, but I'm not too confident unless they pick up their play on the offensive side of the ball, which they're going to have to talk to.
Yo, man, I watched Houston yesterday, and they suffered from a Scarface disease. No balls. No balls, now.
Okay.
And I'm being straight
right.
up with you because I'm watching the game and I mm-hmm. saw, you know, I really got to sit down and really watch the whole game of Houston.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I saw a whole lot of similarities to the Redskins offense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know, basically with the whole stretch running game and how they were calling it, the play action and stuff like that. But I just saw it seemed like they was not trying to just take it on. Other than Arian Foster was a total beast.
Mm-hmm.
Youngin looked focused. Look like he out there to do whatever he's supposed to do to get a win. I can't say that about the play call. I can't say that about the play call.
Yeah.
It was a little vanilla.
Yeah.
It was a little vanilla.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm looking at it and I'm like, what are they doing?
Yeah.
What are they doing? And
yeah.
I'm like, yo, you got this dude over here and you got Shab here. He a slinger. What y'all doing? Y'all
yeah.
got the play action. What y'all doing?
Yeah, there was a few times down. Well, the first few times they got down near the goal line, and their play. Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right about that. Their play calling was suspect, and they had to settle for field goals.
Yeah.
And at times when they were rolling, and they came up short on a first down. And they heard it from the crowd, rather than go for it, because your defense is playing well and holding Cincinnati back, you decided to either kick a field goal or punt the ball. And I'm like, you know what, man, you gotta have a little bit more heart. You gotta be less conservative and go for the jugular here. And they weren't doing it. He was playing it very safe. And what you're seeing when you say it was similar to the Redskins, you're right, because the fact is Gary Kubiak used to be assistant coach, used to play under the Shanahan, Mike Shanahan. So he carried that offense to the Houston Texans with the zone with the zone blocking schemes.
Yeah, the zone blocking stretch.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Everything looked very similar. Mm-hmm. Only thing is I didn't see not one call where they was either going for the juggler or being the drunk gambler and betting
right.
it all. I ain't see it one time.
You're
and
absolutely
like,
right.
I was like, what is he doing?
Right.
What are they doing?
Yep.
Then I started to think. I was like, hold up. You know, let me look at Marvin Lewis. Let me look at the Bengals. What they was doing? They didn't do nothing spectacular. They wasn't doing nothing spectacular on defense. I didn't see too much to limit them. They played well, but there was some opportunities there. So I don't know.
Well, in my opinion, both those teams, the play calling was cautiously. They played very close to the vest.
Right.
Versus, I don't know if it was because it was the playoffs and they were afraid of opening up the offense to make a mistake, but they played extremely conservative and. Sometimes you gotta take a shot.
As much as
I don't like Bill Belichick, he takes shots all the time. He takes risks all the time that's how you instill confidence in your players, that you're willing to take a risk. But
definitely.
If you play close to the vest, then that means you don't trust your players. Confident in your players. That play will play out on the field. So
exactly. And if I got Andre Johnson on my Mob Slim, I'm taking risks all the time. You heard?
Right.
I'm taking risks all the time.
Because right.
that dude is a baller.
Well, we got about 7 minutes left. I don't want to go through the I'll go through it, but briefly, the Minnesota at Green Bay at the last minute. At the last minute or just before game time or an hour before, whatever it was, which is basically just before, and Christian Ponder was inactive, and Joe Webb had to become the quarterback. And I don't know if you noticed the statistic or not, he was the first quarterback in NFL history to start a playoff game that had never thrown a pass in the regular season.
That dude Joe Webb pissed away a spectacular opportunity.
Yep.
Really did.
Yep.
He really pissed it away. And honestly, I was a little upset because I was like, uh-oh, the cat out of the bag. This dude going to play the type of game that need to be played against the Green Bay to whoop him. But, you know, I ain't want that cat to come out the bag until – we go to Lambeau. But, yeah, man.
He was put in a bad position, man. I mean,
he was put in a bad position.
I mean, he hadn't thrown a pass in an NFL game the whole season. So, you know he's going to have to pass the ball because everybody's gearing up for Adrian Peterson. And you saw what happened. He was throwing the ball high – in the dirt, in front of guys, and you know, he completed passes. I think 11 passes he completed out of 30 or whatever it was, and he threw a touchdown pass. But for all intents and purposes, that's just like you and I being put in a playoff situation, not throwing a pass in the NFL. Maybe run the read option or something, but not throwing a pass and go out there and win a game for us. I mean, you know, you're in a no-win situation. You're in a no-win situation.
Huh? Yeah, it was a lot. You're right.
Yeah,
it was a lot.
So,
it was
a lot. So the odds makers, I had told Black, because I had talked to Black yesterday on the show, because I had the show yesterday. Vic was unavailable.
Oh, damn.
Yeah. Yeah, he was unavailable. I texted him later on because I saw in the archives, live and archive listeners were way up compared to when he's the host. So I told him this show is mine now. Anyway, what was I saying now? I lost my train of thought here.
You talking about Joe Webb, and you was talking about how you went at the odds makers.
Oh, the odds makers. Once they got wind of him being the quarterback, you know, they rushed to the window to put heavy money on Green Bay, because I told Black yesterday I didn't think this game was going to be close, and it really wasn't. So I think the spread was 7.5 or something like that, and they easily beat that. So I didn't expect that to be any kind of contest. I didn't think Adrian Peterson would run for 200 yards. I didn't think he'd get 150, to tell you the truth. And he didn't.
Yeah.
He just 1 yard short of 100. So.
Uh-huh.
Let's move on and briefly, because I want to get to the main game. We'll save that best for last. Indianapolis against the Baltimore Ravens. In Indianapolis is the last game of Ray Lewis. It will play in Baltimore, because they have to go on the road regardless of who they play. If they win this game, they have to go on the road. So this is the last game Ray Lewis is going to play before his retirement in Baltimore. What's your thoughts on this game?
I think the Ravens are going to take it. I think it was a nice run for the Colts. Chuck is a phenomenal man. You know, his story is just beautiful and everything. But they need to go ahead and go home.
Right.
Go ahead and go home.
Yeah, I don't think Andrew Luck doesn't normally play well on the road. That's his MO.
Oh no, this season. And then looking at their whole schedule, that was a setup, man. Got here. Baltimore should smack them up real good.
Yeah, with the added incentive, like I said, of Ray Lewis playing his last game, and it's ironic.
Oh, yeah.
This is ironic, Mikal. I don't know if you know, realize it. It's ironic that the Indianapolis Colts, which was born because the Baltimore Colts moved to Baltimore and became the Baltimore Ravens, are playing each other in Ray Lewis's last game. So this is pretty ironic, and it's must-see TV along with the next game, which is Seattle and Russell, last name Wilson, against Mr. RG3 and the Redskins. This is a game which is must-see TV. Two dynamic, extremely dynamic, and charismatic type of players in Russell Wilson, who's very low-key and very mature past his years, along with RG3. These two rookie quarterbacks going to play against each other. I'm going to put this in here. I don't know if you know this or not. I read this, and I want to get your thoughts on it, and then we'll talk about the game. Dr. James Andrews, for those who are listening, we're going to be going into overtime. I want to appreciate you listening, but we're going to be going just a little bit into overtime to go through this one game that's left, which is the Seahawks and the Redskins. I appreciate you all who have been listening. Stay on the line. You can still listen to us or call in. You can listen to us that way if you like. Otherwise, I'll be back here once again, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'm JT, a.k.a. the Master, and I'm always here on 10 a.m. talking about sports, politics, or whatever else, or some social issues. Whatever comes up is what I talk about, and that's how I roll here. But getting back to what I was talking about here, I want to talk about something that came up about RG3, and I don't know if it's a controversy or not, but I'm going to put this out there and get your thoughts. Dr. James Andrews, said he never cleared RG3 to return to the field because he never even examined him. And remember, they said he was on his sidelines that day he got injured. This conflicts heavily with what head coach Mike Shanahan said shortly after the initial injury happened. Andrews was on the sideline that day, and Shanahan said he asked the world-renowned surgeon if RG3 could go back in. Shanahan said he was told by Andrews that he was good to go. Andrews goes as far to say that he's the one that finally shut Griffin down, and adds that he's still a nervous wreck and holding my breath, in quotation marks, over the situation. Despite all of this, RG3 will be out there Sunday afternoon against the Seahawks, sporting the knee brace and all. It's clear that he's not really at 100%, though. So Andrews was on the sideline when he got hurt, and he said he never cleared him to return to the field.
Uh-oh.
Because he never even examined him.
Oh. I don't know if he ever even examined him or not, because I damn sure saw him go out there with him.
Mm-hmm.
He damn sure was out there looking at him.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if he wasn't examining him or not, but he damn sure went out there.
Mm-hmm.
He damn sure went out there. I looked right at him.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, but I just read this article. It happened to be on RotoWorld, and I'm saying, wow. Wow.
I don't know the validity of that story, because watching that game, I distinctly saw the good doctor go out there. Now
mm-hmm.
whether he examined him or not, I don't know. You know what I'm saying? But he was down there looking at him, so
mm-hmm.
I don't know. And he is on the sidelines of every Redskins game. And that is, you know, I think that's what Mr. Snyder is paying him for. And I think he pays him quite handsomely for him to be on the sideline.
Well,
so
I would think so, yes.
Right.
I would think so.
I don't know.
Well,
I don't know.
Okay.
But hold on. I want to say one more thing.
Right.
And then when RG went back out, that looked to be a RG's decision.
Yeah, you're right about that.
He went out there. And then as he was playing, he took himself out.
Right.
You know what I mean? So
Right. So
I had to challenge the validity of that story.
Okay.
So I don't know.
All right. Well, since we're talking about that game, Seattle versus Washington in Washington, which Seattle's favored by 3. Talk to me, Mikel. We got two dynamic quarterbacks. One defense, Seattle's better than the other. Two strong running games, Marshawn Lynch, Alfred Morris. Who wins this game? I know you're a Redskins fan. Give me an honest opinion of who wins this game and why.
Honestly, Skins going to take this game. The Skins are going to take this game. Seattle and the Redskins playing. One, Seattle is, you know, Seattle's defense isn't. I wouldn't say that they're that much different from anybody else. I don't know where all these analysts keep coming up with. You know, this is a better defense. It's not Dallas and da 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 da. And I'm like, oh, okay. So they not Dallas. Okay, that's all y'all saying. I mean, because this is the exact same defense that they had last year. All the same players, right? And we played them last year, and we beat them with Rex.
Right.
I don't see how everybody's getting this. I don't even see where how Vegas is laying them 3 points out there like that.
Yeah, well.
I don't even see it.
I understand what you're saying, and I – Black and I were talking about the Indianapolis-Houston game, and Black said he liked Cincinnati. And I'm going to tell you what I told Black yesterday. The so-called experts, and I told Black a long time ago, and I keep telling him anytime he comes up and says that and pretty much going along with the experts, so-called experts I never pay attention to. I always pay attention to my eyes and what my experience and what I see. And I've always said this, and I'll keep saying this, even though they've proved me wrong a few times. There's two teams that don't play well on the road, Jacksonville and Seattle. And guess who's playing against Washington in Washington? Seattle.
I understand
they have a good team. I understand that.
Oh, can I give you another caveat?
What's that?
We went to Seattle and beat them last year.
Okay, that's true. So what I'm saying is that they know this team. In fact, they know the offense because they have a quarterback that runs a similar offense. So it's not like this offense with the read option that they've put in with Russell Wilson along with his throwing ability is anything new to the Washington Redskins. So I like Washington to win this. And you know what? I told Black, like I said, I told Black that the Green Bay would beat Minnesota and wouldn't be even close. I'm predicting this. They say it's supposedly going to be a Seattle win by 3. So that means it's going to be basically a close game. I think Washington wins this by a touchdown. That's how confident I am in the play of Washington, even though Seattle has a good defense with very good corners that are physical. Now, those physical corners, depending on who is the ref, depends on how much they get away with. Because if the refs don't call the play downfield, then it'll be tougher on Washington. If the refs call it like they should, then it's going to be tough on Seattle corners to be able to deal with the Washington Redskins wide receivers. So I'm predicting this, that Washington to win this game 23-17, something like that. That's how I see it.
That was the score last year.
Is that right? See,
that's exactly what the score was last year.
Okay.
23-17.
I see 23 for Washington and 17 for Seattle.
I don't even see the score. Maybe a touchdown, but this game ain't even gonna be close. This is that.
Okay.
This is that.
Let me tell you something to close this out. Your boy on Friday night is a huge, huge hater of the white Redskins. He can't get over that hump.
Hold up. But here's the secret. Mm-hmm. I'm not calling the show until the Redskins have to go to Lambeau. And you can let him know that.
Okay.
So that's what? 1, 2, 3, 4. That's about 4 predictions I'm making. That's about 4 predictions I'm making.
Okay.
When I will call his show. The Washington Redskins are going to Lambeau.
All right. I hear you. All right. Well, with that being said, we come to the conclusion of the show. Mikhail, I did listen to your last guest on, I think it was Tuesday, with Mr. Smith.
Oh, man,
where did you get him from? Oh, man.
I don't know. He blew the whole show because I was rolling. I was going.
Wow. I was listening to him. I'm like, what the heck is he talking about? But that's
exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. Exactly. But she wanted to have him on there to have a conversation, but another conversation that broke out, and it was like, all the chicks against me, and they love it when I do that. I don't know why I don't know what's up with that.
Mm-hmm.
And I just be there, the last man standing, just swinging.
Wow. And I apologize because I was going to jump in on Wednesday. And I got tied up and forgot all about it. But I'm just letting you know that I'm listening. Let me put it that way. I'm listening, and if I hear something I want to jump into, I'm going to jump into it. But I didn't want anything to come close to touching that what Mr. Smith was saying. I have to admit he was out there, and I let him stay out there by himself, in my opinion. I could be wrong, but...
Yeah, some folks you just gotta let them go.
Right.
But he just, that dude just killed the whole conversation.
Mm-hmm.
He just killed it.
Yeah.
I don't know what in the world was on his mind, but you know, that's what the lady wanted to have on the show. She wanted to have him on the show.
Mm-hmm.
She had him on the show. So you know.
All right. Well, with that being said, I want you to promote your shows, and then we can get on out of here.
Okay, Grown Soul and Real Talk Radio, every Tuesday and Wednesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Check us out. We talk about everything from politics to life and love. Sometimes we get it in on sports, but we like to come here to talk sports, though, for real.
Right. I hear you. All right, Macal, I appreciate you coming in, stopping in, and conversing with me for this one time, for this time on Sunday. Enjoy both the games, because both the games should be pretty good to watch. For those listeners out there, I appreciate you always calling in, always tuning me in, whether you're listening on the net or whatever way you listen. I appreciate it. Come back next week, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. The master plan, I'll be the one on the master plan dealing with it and dealing with everything that's happened over the past week. And as always, I stopped saying this, but I'm going to say it again. I promise to say this in closing every week I can possibly think of it. Too close is this. Life is a spear. Let me put it this way. Life is a spear. What goes around comes around. Be careful how you treat people. Today may be for you, but always remember tomorrow is for someone else. Just how God pulls you up, he can pull you down. You never know who you will need in the future, so be careful how you treat people. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Like I said, peace and blessings, like Macal always says. And until next week, we're out of here. See ya.
I got a plan, some sort of strategy. Hold my calls and get in touch with EFC. Give them the message, give them a red alert. Tell them I need them, tell them it's time to work. Tell them I'm home, thinking of my profits. Going out in the world to teach knowledge to the brothers and sisters that don't know about the mother, about the right way to go. Stop them from selling out. Teach them what pride is all about. Go out and tell them it's time to take a stand. YZ.